Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Special.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Yeah, I'm doing good. This is our second kick at the can tonight.
What are you doing right now as this airs?
I am visiting family.
Really?
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
In New Brunswick?
Yes.
Hmm. Are you having fun?
I am sure that I am.
I'm thinking not.
No, I think it's going to be pretty good. Yeah. Going to be doing all kinds of stuff.
Excellent.
Lots of stuff on the plan.
Well, it's good to get out there in the summer and see family, friends,
yep,
and
yep,
whatnot. Get away from Toronto for a while.
I know.
Get away from the job for a while.
Exactly.
Get out there and enjoy yourself.
It's going to be glorious.
Check out some paddle trails.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from Kenjikujik if you go to Nova Scotia.
Kenjikujik, yeah. Yeah. Why stick away from it?
Apparently, ticks are massively bad right now.
Oh, in Kejibukujik?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep, yep. But that's Nova Scotia. You guys aren't going there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're hanging out in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
The little brother of Nova Scotia.
Yeah, because there's no ticks in New Brunswick.
Right? You ship them off to Nova Scotia. I'm sure you'll have a great time.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What do we got going this week here? Nothing new happening that I know of.
Nothing new?
Nothing new.
Nothing new.
Nothing. We should do like a 3-minute podcast one day. Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean. This is Derek. See ya.
Just post it.
There we go. What did I miss?
Did I fall asleep?
Right?
Was that already done?
I think I just had a time warp thing. Or talk really, really slow.
Yeah.
And then speed it up.
Yeah.
Oh, the fun we could have.
I know. We should put one of those out just for the fun of it.
In the meantime, let's talk about Colorado.
Oh, yes.
A beginner's guide to kayaking Colorado. I found this article by Sarah Hansen.
Wasn't it 2 weeks ago we talked about Colorado water level super low and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. There was an emergency, drought emergency.
Yeah.
Colorado conjures images of towering peaks, sun-scorched red rock, but look closer and you'll find the state is threaded with rivers, reservoirs, alpine lakes that make it one of the most exciting kayaking destinations in the country. Now, when we were talking about the drought there, that was affecting more the rafting companies and stuff. But there's more than just the big rivers
do. Exactly.
From glassy high altitude lakes, you can only reach on foot to world-class white water that draws paddlers from around the globe. Colorado rewards kayakers at every skill level. Different sports, flat water versus white water. If you want to kayak in Colorado, it's important to know that flat water and white water kayaking are different sports.
I didn't know that.
Okie dokie. I didn't realize. I did not realize that was a. mind you, we take that for granted now.
Yeah, right? I guess.
Flat water kayaking is a beginner friendly and usually just needs a life jacket, basic paddling skills, and some weather awareness. So if you're going on a slow moving river, out on a lake, you get yourself into a kayak and doodly do around. Rentals are easy to find. The risks are low. Whitewater kayaking, on the other hand, requires specialized gear, such as a helmet, spray skirt, and a whitewater kayak.
This author is just new into any sport, I think.
You'll also need to be a strong swimmer, know about river hazards, get proper instruction. Risks are higher, so beginners should take lessons before trying whitewater. I think that's what she's saying is sort of like, for the new people, you might want to, they might not know this info.
Sure.
Hence the beginner's guide to kayaking in Colorado.
Yeah.
Flat water is very beginner friendly, says Nick White, owner of White Water Workshop in Golden. People can rent a kayak at many state and local parks and have a great day without a lesson. Just wear a life jacket and don't get surprised by bad weather. Always check the weather before you go out and be ready for sudden changes. In Colorado, wind, rain, or storms can come up quickly. If you see dark clouds, feel the wind picking up, or hear thunder, leave the water right away and find shelter on shore. Pay attention, and planning ahead will help you avoid problems and have a safe, fun trip.
Yeah.
We do that in all our sports.
Absolutely.
Whitewater is a different story. Colorado's rivers are generally faster, steeper, and colder than most rivers elsewhere in the United States. Experts say if you want to kayak on moving water, take a lesson first. Taking lessons is a great way to get familiar with the fundamental skills, says Jonathan Kahn, owner of Confluence Kayak and Ski in Denver. Beth Bowren of Colorado Whitewater Board member agrees. Anybody starting a new activity should take lessons, especially if you're going to do whitewater. For whitewater beginners, insist on American Canoe Association certified kayak instructor. Low snowpack, low flow is what kayakers need to know. Because this year's snowpack is lower than usual, Colorado's rivers will have less water than normal.
I thought they were predicting higher snowfall last winter.
Last winter they were. They were predicting
more. They said, hey, we're going to refill all the reservoirs. Yeah. It's going to be great.
And it didn't,
happen.
Didn't happen. This means flows will be lower, which can make some stretches of the river shallower and rockier, affecting the conditions kayakers encounter, a.k.a. how many things you're going to bounce off of, how many rocks you're going to hit.
Yep.
Kahn warns that flows could be as low as we've ever seen them, potentially peaking as early as April rather than typical late May or June, tapering off by the end of June rather than running through the full summer. Ooh. That's horrid.
Yeah, that's going to change things.
Your season ends in April.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, as opposed to the full summer.
And the tough part of that is the industry itself. It's like people, this is how people make their living.
Right? With less water in the rivers, kayakers may find some sections to be rockier and shallower. This can make navigation trickier, and some areas might not be passable by kayak at all. Always check water conditions before heading out. Or you just portage.
Yeah.
You mix canoeing and whitewater paddling. Still, the experts see some good news. I think this will be a great year to learn to kayak. Kahn says this year is a good chance to get outside, enjoy nature, improve your kayaking skills. Key rivers include the Upper South Platte, Upper Colorado, and Arkansas. They benefit from robust water management programs and safeguard reliable minimum flows even in dry years.
So they hold some water back. They don't just, it all flows out in the spring. Mm-hmm. It's like they're holding it back, maintaining a reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they just need to refill
those reserves.
Yeah.
Hopefully, hoping for another heavy snow season.
For the Arkansas River, the voluntary flow program ensures dependable minimum flows extend through mid-August with reservoir releases scheduled to optimize recreational use. Now, isn't it the Madawaska? When you guys did your course, they have a time of day that they release water, wasn't there?
Yes. I think it was back in the 70s or 80s that the Ontario Power Generation worked with MKC to have a set schedule, and it's interesting when you're on the river. It's like a massive whitewater river, but then it's like 8 or 9 a.m. till about 4 p.m. and so you get a full flow, but you go down if you're there for. I've been there a few times for training, and taken some courses, and like you go down there after supper to check out the river, and it's just a burbling brook type thing. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is so different. And it's like the water is turned off. It's pretty wild. It's really interesting to see. I'd like to get down there to do some slow-mo video of the water rising and go throughout the day. I think that would make some interesting video. So time-lapse videos.
That's what they're doing here as well, the same sort of thing, right?
Controlled releases, yes.
Certain locations such as Glenwood Canyon's Shoshone section have water rights that provide in-stream flow protection despite low snowpack. Don't skip this essential safety tips for Colorado paddlers. All three experts agree on one point. Wear your life jacket every time.
Experts? I think anybody who likes life should suggest that.
We've met some other people would disagree, but many people die every year in Colorado because they didn't wear a life jacket, says White. Winds come up fast, tip people over, and water is usually very cold. I mean, if they're relying on snowpack from the mountains.
Oh.
You know where that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a deadly combination. Follow these safety tips. Always wear a life jacket. Wear a helmet for Class 2 rapids and above. Dress for cold water. Use wetsuits, dry suits, and layers like fleece or neoprene. Skip cotton, since it won't keep you warm when wet. The right gear keeps you safe and comfortable if you fall in. That's a big one that when I first started canoe tripping, no one really mentioned the cotton thing.
Yeah.
Same with jeans. No one really.
Jeans and
because I was, as my grandfather used to call them, dungarees.
Yeah.
You did everything in your jeans.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Right? And then one day somebody said, you shouldn't wear cotton. You shouldn't wear jeans because, you know, it holds the water, keeps the cold. So if you dunk.
Stay wet longer.
Yeah. And it's like, never really thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've worn jeans since.
Well, and plus they're not that comfortable in a canoe or kayak, right? Constrictive, restrictive.
No, mine weren't.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You wear yours a couple
my
sizes.
My skinny jeans?
Your triple extra large?
I pull up to my nipples. Rehearsing for when I'm 80?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, it seems more of a thing nowadays that, yeah, you just don't wear those things. And there's more choices of clothing now, too, right? Never kayak alone, especially if you're just starting out. Tell others where you're going and when you expect to return. No river conditions. Hazards can change quickly and aren't always easy to spot. Don't overestimate your skill level.
That's an easy one to get wrong.
You know what? That's it's so easy just to go, well, I'm not going to chicken out of this like everybody else.
I can do it. Those guys are doing it. I'm going to do it.
Well, now hopefully these guys realize before it's too late that, no, you can't do it. Always use a spray skirt on white water to keep water out of your kayak. Paddle with a group and agree on how to communicate on the river.
This is clearly written for beginners.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, like I say, it's called The Beginner's Guide to Kayaking in Colorado. American Canoe Association recently released a free resource called Smart Start, which includes a paddling safety infographic and free online course for new paddlers. Ready to paddle? How to find lessons and rentals near you. Rent flatwater kayaks at locations such as Chatfield, Horsetooth, and Carter Lake. Reserve online for busy periods. On-site rental is often available midweek. Mountain reservoirs such as Dillon and Granby have colder water, so dress for it. For whitewater, secure lessons with a certified instructor or trusted professional outfitter. Do not attempt on your own.
Yeah, this is not a figure it out on your own type thing. Whitewater is a bit more complicated.
It's like watching all these people do these waterfalls. Ah, 30-foot waterfall. All right. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No, you won't. There's something for everybody in paddling, says Con. It doesn't have to be supercharged, adrenaline-fueled rapids. Be willing to try it and try something new. It's a great way to enjoy Colorado in the summertime. Best spots for beginners. South Platte River near Deckers. The Deckers section of the South Platte River is the state's premier whitewater introduction. Steady dam-managed class 1 and 2 flows in a picturesque canyon. Rely on this section for consistent beginner-friendly whitewater experiences. 1 to 2, class 1 to 2 is pretty cool.
Yes.
St. Vrain River in Lyons, the Apple Valley. Use Apple Valley in Lyons as the definitive beginner's introduction to moving water. Start at the wooden bridge on Apple Valley Road and exit in East Lyons. This stretch offers accessible, safe training.
And that's, you have to build up, especially with whitewater, you have to build up your experience, your skills, right? Yeah. Because you're going to get yourself into trouble pretty darn quick if you don't know certain techniques about, like, eventually you have to get a roll out of it, or else you're going to be swimming a lot. But mm-hmm. otherwise, you just to know how to get in and out, practicing escaping from a kayak if you're over turning river. That's a big confidence booster because yep. I remember when I first started, like, until I knew that I could safely exit the kayak, that I wasn't going to get trapped in it, it's very apprehensive. It's like, oh, can I do this? Can I get out of it? Mm-hmm. And even with whitewater canoeing, if the first time you try it out, it's like, I'm really wedged in here and these knee straps are really holding me down. Am I going to be able to get out of this? You can get out pretty quick. It's a confidence builder just to do a couple rolls. And the few times that I've done some whitewater training, that's the very first thing they do is like, okay, well, they do obviously stretches and this is what we're going to do today, yada, yada, yada. Okay, well, now we're not going to proceed with any further training until everybody rolls and not rolls, but tips. Flips, tips, dumps, escapes. I want everybody to know how easy it is to get out of it, you know, yada, 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 right? So that worked out really well. It's like, oh, I can get out of this. You know, I don't have to rely on somebody to, you know, get to the bottom of the river and dig me out of this canoe or kayak, right?
But isn't the whole point to keep the open side up?
Absolutely, but right? That doesn't always work that way.
Well, if you try hard enough.
With enough skill. Right? We had an odd number of people, and I remember going with the instructor, and the few times the instructor was in the bow seat, it's like I found it incredible how suddenly stable my canoe was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, normally it's twitchy, and suddenly, hey, the canoe stopped being twitchy. So it makes a difference when you have an expert in the bow seat. It's like, wow, what a difference.
Knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all that safe training.
Yep. Experience, a lot of experience.
Oh, yeah. Upper Colorado River near Burns or Desero. Rely on Burns to Desero stretch of the Upper Colorado River for scenic, low-risk moving water. Ideal for the whitewater paddlers. The bumphouse to state bridge float is a proven route. And that's the other thing is doing some research, you're going to find routes you can do as well.
Yes.
That'll suit your comfort your level.
Skill level. And comfort
and school. Yeah. Ruby Horse Thief Canyon, Colorado River near Fruta. Experience Ruby Horse Thief Canyon for an unrivaled scenic class 1-2 paddle. Secure camping permits exclusively through recreation.gov or the BLM. Regulations are strict and must be observed. The stretch demands planning and delivers unmatched beginner scenery.
You're not just there for the whitewater.
No, that's another thing too. That you can add to your toolbox is you start having to plan things and whatnot, right?
Yes.
Big Soda Lake, Bear Creek Lake, and Chatfield State Park. Select Big Soda Lake and Chatfield State Park near Denver for accessible, high-quality paddling. These waters guarantee a relaxed experience close to the city. And if you go to Googling everything, you'll be able to find people that are that know the routes,
yep.
Have chats with the people and stuff like that. If you go to Rally Crew,
yep, they'll have.
You can go there and
they'll have data on the rivers and the sections.
You can ask different questions, and if there's people that do paddle it, do you want to go out for the day? I'm a beginner, and you get people to hopefully meet up with you and Chatfield Horsetooth Carter Lake. Use Chatfield, Horsetooth, and Carter Lake as your go-to Front Range flatwater destinations. Rentals and ample space support all skill levels. Best spots for intermediate and advanced paddlers. Arkansas River. The Arkansas River is Colorado's top whitewater spot with over 100 miles of paddling from Class 2 to Class 5. Famous sections include Browns Canyon, Class 3, very popular, The Numbers, Class 4 to 5 above Browns Canyon, and the Royal Gorge. A name like that, you can't go wrong. Clear Creek, Idaho Springs to Golden. Choose Clear Creek from Idaho Springs through Golden for ready access to whitewater near Denver. Upper sections test intermediate skills, while the Golden Whitewater Park excels when flows are moderate. Cache Laputer River near Fort Collins. Test your skills on Cache Laputer, Colorado's singular national wild and scenic river. Variable difficulty ensures appeal to every serious kayaker. Consult American Whitewater for precise route details. When you're getting bigger and harder, more advanced, you need to check the routes, and you can't just barge in there, right?
A key thing is also scouting. If you can't clearly see a route from above, like if a river turns or if it drops enough, it's always you always got to get out and scout. Walk the rocks. Look at the – choose a line. See where you're going to go. And now a lot of that comes with experience, right? Knowing how to pick a line through a set of boulders or whatever faces you. It's like hop out. Do a walk. Walk around, take a look, and scout it.
I'm more of a let me just bounce off crap kind of guy.
You can really get yourself in trouble, though, depending on where the water goes and how it drops.
Definitely. Glenwood Canyon Shoshone section. Use Glenwood Canyon Shoshone section as Colorado's most consistent intermediate run. 1,250 CFS flows are maintained by legal mandate. Tackle class 3-4 rapids for skill advancement and relegate beginners to guides. The Roaring Forks final miles offer easier runs suitable for novice paddlers. Boulder Creek. Employ Boulder Creek as a definitive front range intermediate run. American Whitewater provides authoritative route descriptions. And the South Platte River, Cheeseman Canyon, and Waterton Canyon, a reliable stretch close to Denver that holds water well through the season, one of the best options when flows are low. This stretch near Denver usually has good water levels all season. It's one of the best choices when other rivers are running low. And do your research before you go on the river flows.
Yes.
There's enough things online to tell you what's running, what's not. You don't want to drive for 2 hours to go somewhere that's supposed to have water.
And it doesn't.
And then, look, the water's gone.
There's usually a lot of online. I know here in Ontario, there's a lot of online resources where you can actually see either the current within a few hours of what the flow is. And there's also data listed with a lot of canoe and kayaking is that, you don't want to run this below 1,200 cubic feet per second. If it gets below that, then it's too rocky and bumpy and above a certain level of flow. If it's up in the, I'm going to pick a number out of the air, 3,000 cubic feet per second, it's too much. It's expert level only at that flow, whatever. Right. Like we planned, a trip up to Moosonee Moose Factory with Burt Reynolds, Memorial River Run, and our trip, we canceled it because we were monitoring water levels, and by the time September came around for our trip, it was like, oh, the water levels are way too low. Yep. We can't, it's not runnable. And a lot of outfitters were going, no, we're not running this river this late in the season. It's a lot lower than it normally is. So we canceled that trip, and unfortunately, it would have been great. But so I've always wanted to paddle to Moosonee Moose Factory and not take the slow road, but take the whitewater route. But unfortunately, you have to really know what you're getting into, look at what the typical flows are. You can, it's a lot of the, with, again, in Ontario, you can see what the typical year-to-year over average, what the flows are going to be. And well, for that route, it's always sketchy around mid to late September. So you get to a point in first, second week of September where the water flow gets too low. But then as you hit towards the end of September, winter's coming. It's going to start getting really cold and you can't predict the weather. It's going to get too unpredictable and unsafe.
You need to go in, say, end of June. When all the bugs are there.
That's the problem. But
that water will be moving you so fast.
The bugs can't catch you.
Yeah, the bugs won't even. They'll be ripping off your face like off a car windshield. You don't need to worry. As long as you got yourself a mouth guard and eyeglass, you're good to go. Yeah. Trust me.
And if any states or other provinces are, it's typical, a lot of these things are posted online, what the typical flows are and what the current flows. You can go and see a map and see what the flows are like in the area mm-hmm. you plan to be in.
So if you're a beginner kayaker looking to do some kayaking in Colorado, if it's flat water or white water, know the difference, and do your training.
Exactly.
Always wear your safety gear.
Nothing ruins a vacation faster than somebody dying on your trip.
Right? And if you're like me, I don't haul the carcass out.
Nope.
You're there. You're there.
Pile rocks
on. I'll tell people when to get back, but I ain't carrying you out. Get your training. Go with people. Never go alone. Do some research online. Meet other people.
Yeah.
That can possibly come out with you and talk to the routes that you're looking at doing.
Sure. As with anything, even if it's like whatever, camping, whatever mm-hmm. you do, everybody, there's always somebody with a little, you know, tweak or way to look at water and or how to plan stuff, what to expect from a river run. Always rely on people with more experience and don't just make assumptions. You always have to be safe. Come back safely.
Yep. Definitely do it. But go out and enjoy yourself at the end of the day.
Excellent. Absolutely.
Because like I say, everybody's got to start somewhere.
Yep.
And eventually that starting point turns into, I remember when I was started this 15, 20 years ago. We were talking the other day there, and it was like, I've been over 35 years paddling.
Wait.
Wasn't it just like 25 years? I was not doing this 25 years. No, it's like over 35 years.
Yeah. You're old, man. You are so old.
I'm so old. I need people to paddle me around now.
Yeah.
I bring up this topic because I know you've always been interested in Mount Everest.
Yep.
Green boots.
Yeah, anybody who knows the roots and the stories that come out in the news mm-hmm. should recognize they named the guy Green Boots.
1996, 10 climbers embarked on what would have been the first Indian ascent of Everest from the north side. But frigid storms and gale force winds separated the climbing team and stranded 3 men in the mountain's death zone. Altitude at which there is too little oxygen for long-term survival. One of the bodies froze along the route and was so iconic that it became a waypoint for future climbers en route to the summit. After nearly 30 years as a grisly landmark in the north side of Everest, the body known as Green Boots is the target of a recovery effort by Indian authorities. The Indo-Tibetan Border Police has issued a call for experienced high-altitude teams to bring down the remains from around 8,500 meters on the northeast ridge route on the Tibetan side of the mountain and deliver them to Delhi by October.
And if you're out there saying, well, why is the body still there? There's a lot of bodies. But they're at altitude where it's dangerous to go up there. And so to get just yourself up there and your own supplies is hard enough as it is, let alone going up there to recover a body. And sometimes it's very inadvisable just because of the dangers involved. You don't want to go to recover a body and lose your own life. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these bodies are left on Everest. And people are really focused on the summit. They're not going to stop and pick up bodies on the way down. Well, for one, you're everybody's goal oriented, right? But also, it's just dangerous to recover.
Well, if it's an area where you're on oxygen tank, when you start trying to do extra work of digging out that frozen
burning
body,
more and more oxygen,
you're huffing and puffing, and you're going through your mm-hmm. oxygen, and just could lead to disaster.
Yep.
Right. This would be no ordinary operation. The tender calls for specialist agencies with proven track records in similar recoveries, ideally recent experience on Everest itself. Teams must include at least 6 Sherpas who have reached the summit multiple times. They must document their work thoroughly. Full mission could span up to 40 days. factoring in extreme challenges of working in the death zone during summer and early autumn. The body rests curled in a small rocky alcove below the first step, about 8,500 meters. For decades, its bright lime green boots made it an unmistakable reference point for climbers heading up or down the ridge. Many used its location as a checkpoint, radioing base camp upon reaching it. Over time, it became one of Everest's most talked about and photographed grim landmarks. Long-standing debate over whether the body belonged to Tsang Pajur or Dorje Murup has now been officially settled by the government of India. Both Indian climbers died the same day, but DNA testing conducted ahead of the recovery mission concluded that the remains are Dorje Murup. So I guess somebody along the passing, one way or the other,
must have
grabbed
a piece. Sample, yeah.
Of something, and they could do some DNA testing on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
And it's because, like I say, I know it's not paddling related, but I know you're always interested in this stuff that happens on Everest. And
body recoveries is very rare on Everest. It's usually it takes a wealthy family to put together a team to recover some loved family member or whatever, but oftentimes it's really not worth the risk to life and limb to bring if you're going up there to rescue a living person, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But for a recovery mission, it's sometimes or most of the time, it's just not worth the risks and dangers.
And it's not like you can just like put them on a toboggan and send them down.
No, it's like it's going to be a controlled descent, mm-hmm. and you're going to be in oxygen. You're going to be like, I'm sure the Sherpas may not be, but they often are too, sometimes depending on weather conditions and whatever. But
how long you're in that area, exactly. How much work they're having to do.
Yeah.
Right. So see what happens there. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
This one had me thinking a bit. Somebody dropped the ball in the communications department.
Yes.
Guides with Revelstoke-based Apex Rafting were cruising a routine run down the Illisquit River Rapids on June 7th when one of them noticed an unusual shape below the surface. The guide claimed to have glimpsed an automobile underwater.
Everybody's like, yeah, you saw what?
Fellow rafters reportedly refused to believe it. But the truth quickly surfaced that someone had driven a vehicle off the Trans-Canada Highway into the river. We were never notified about the vehicle, Apex owner-operator Ralph Korber recounted in an email, that it entered the river during some very high water in late May, and when the water level dropped enough, we noticed it as we passed over. Perhaps more surprising was how long the vehicle had already sat submerged on the river floor. As we hadn't heard anything about it, we called 911 and reported to the RCMP. They were already aware that there was a vehicle reported in the river in late May. Korber said it is possible the driver dozed at the wheel late one spring night, only to awaken to quite the splash and chilly water filling the vehicle.
Yeah, it'd be a little shocking.
Right? Carver said the man managed to flee and swim to shore, shaken up but with no serious injuries. Why would the police, knowing that Apex uses that river and
they
that
They may
stretch,
not know.
We figure it's a local business.
Yeah.
Somebody along the route would know.
Exactly, right?
That, hey, by the way, when you guys are going, we had a car go over in the spring.
Yeah.
Careful.
Well, they did say it didn't affect their travel route. And they did say that, you know, it's smooth enough. It's a smooth roof. The windows are still in it. So they were just bumping their rafts off of it and sliding over top of it. Yeah, if water level goes down lower, then it could be a bit more issue. But now that they know it's there, they can watch out for it. And now it's kind of a local landmark. It's like, oh, there goes the car.
So, like, what would have happened if they had a group on a river run and they hit it?
Yeah.
And something bad dumped, happened.
Got caught, ripped a hole in the raft, something bad.
Somebody got caught on it.
Yep. But there's no confirmation.
Somewhere
no...
along the way, somebody had to have known.
Yeah.
Hey, there's river runners coming down here. We might want to post
something. We should let them know about this card that's in
there. Somebody you have to think
yeah.
knew.
Yeah.
And just didn't go, oh, hey, wait a minute. That raft, isn't that going over where that car went?
Hey,
do they
yeah.
know it's there? Maybe we should tell them.
And yeah, that's the funny part is, well, maybe not the funny part, but it's that they discovered it on their own just on a rafting trip. And mm-hmm. it was like, hey, I think I just saw a car under the water. No, you didn't. And so what it is where the car is, it's quite a distance from where the car went in because it just floated with yeah. the current. And so it's in a location away from roads. It's like 2 kilometers downstream of the bridge than the highway crossing. But it's just the way it floated and got washed down river. And now it's in a stable condition with the water just flowing over it. So
luckily,
you don't expect it. It's in no. a location that is like, what? So...
Yeah. Rather than travel the tributary to town, the vehicle came to rest about 2 kilometers downstream from Apex's launch site between Albert Canyon and the eastern access to Mount Revelstoke National Park. So, yeah, two kilometers further down. Fortunately for Revy's rafters, it hasn't put a stop to the daily river runs. Where the vehicle sits now, it doesn't impact our rafting trips, Corber explained. When it's exposed, it's just like a nice smooth rock. We can float either side of it or bump the nose into it for a little spin. Fun as it sounds, while the vehicle seems pretty settled where it is now, if it were to dislodge from its current position and move another 200 meters downstream, it would sit in one of the bigger rapids and would affect our trip. Corber noted that the contaminants entering the river from motor vehicles aren't a good thing, though Apex hasn't noticed any chemicals or other matter downstream yet. Sooner they can safely get the vehicle out of the river, the better. With current stream flow levels, it may still be weeks away. Because, yeah, I mean, with all that water going so fast,
yeah. Oh, yeah,
it's not
yeah.
you can just waltz in there and hook a tow truck.
No, exactly. You have to wait for right? a slower water conditions because, again, just like on Everest, if you're going to pull this out of the river, you don't want anybody else getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to create a situation that's worse than what it is when it started.
Snowpack levels for the Upper Columbia region sat at 105% above the yearly average as of June 15th, according to the BC's latest snow survey and water supply bulletin. We're looking at abundant water levels through most of the summer, Corber said. I really don't know how much of the vehicle needs to be exposed before they could attempt extrication, but we likely won't have low levels until late August. Ministry of Parks and Environment has also been alerted to the sunken vehicle, but echoed that a response to salvage, it must wait for more favorable conditions. Smart, mm-hmm. safe. But like I say, as long as everybody knows it's there now
yeah, yeah.
and keep an eye on it. Recovery is currently unsafe due to fast-moving water and elevated river levels, but will proceed once conditions improve or a safe method is identified, ensuring protection of both people and the environment. Can't they get one of those cranes with a big magnet? Just lower it down.
The thing is how do you get a crane
or a
in
helicopter?
There? You would have to be a heavy lift helicopter, but then the water push against it. It could be very dangerous recovery. They're going to have to get in there.
Cool to watch, though.
You'd be in there by hand, winching attached to trees, pulling it up on the embankment,
mm-hmm.
and then once it's drained of water, maybe a helicopter in a heavy lift helicopter. Like it's not close to roads.
Nah, I still need a big helicopter with a big man. It works in G.I. Joe.
Absolutely.
It added that the vehicle owner, who police say is responsible for removal,
yes,
has been directed to hire contractors to assess the situation and plan a response.
Yeah, such do it on the cheap.
Yeah, such contractors have been evaluating whether recovering the vehicle during the seasonal surge in river levels can be done safely using specialized equipment. Corbett doesn't know whether removing the vehicle will temporarily impact summer rafting, saying it comes down to timing, but the Ministry of Transportation and Transit has always gone to great lengths to ensure our trips function as normally as possible. So again, you would think somebody would have known and said something.
I know.
Asked if Apex ever previously ran into issues with highway traffic in his 33-year history, he recalled a tractor trailer in the late 1990s running over the bank and around the same area where the vehicle entered the Illicit. This spring, RCMP tasked his rafters with helping retrieve the driver and vehicle. That's the only instance I can recall, Korber said. Still, he doesn't see a reason for the province to install a barrier along the shoulder, calling it not a particularly bad spot. And for now, the ministry said provincial environmental emergency response officers are monitoring the situation in the river.
And what's interesting, too, is because of they're talking about these high flows this year, like there was a really high flow event on May 28th. So at the other end of this river near Revelstoke,
mm-hmm.
I came across it because I was reading more about this car, where the car is located. And they talked about in the spring, the water flow and the river flow had increased by sixfold. So they had a huge water event. And, there's a box canyon down near Revelstoke within 2 kilometers of Revelstoke itself. And, the water flow hit such a high level that a log jam that had been there for 12 years had burst free. A lot of the logs moved into new locations down along the river, so there's concerns, but they can now start running that box canyons because they had previously had to portage around the log jam, or they would pull out ahead of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now the box canyon is open, and so it just kind of shows you like the power of water. If you look on Google Maps, find Revelstoke, find the Illicit River, go a few kilometers upriver, and from satellite, it's like, whoa, that's a big log jam.
Right.
But it's now gone. So it's interesting. So things change on the rivers all the time. And that's one of the things with river travel and so on. It doesn't take much of a storm to move things around, and it's not quite like you expected. A dead tree has fallen. Now you got a sweeper that's going to suck you in and hold you in place. So it's one of those things. There's a lot of risk involved with whitewater travel, and either by canoe, kayak, or raft. It's one of those things you really got to take things into account and get an idea of what's going on the river.
Well, I bet you that the vehicle underwater is now okay, everybody get ready. Look over to the right.
Yeah, you see a car.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was my only thing was, like, at some point, somebody may have wanted to let the rafters know.
I know. That it kind of surprises me, like, a little bit. But, again, it's the police. Maybe the police don't have any clue about whitewater. Maybe they never had run into, like, people having issues on the river. But you'd think that's what the whole industry, the tourism industry there, is all about. People mm-hmm. are out there. Like, my niece is out there in Revelstoke right now, and she's working in a restaurant. She's doing all these hikes. She's Instagram this, Instagram that. So she's having a hoot out there in Revelstoke. But, it's one of those things.
Ask her about the car.
I'm going to, now that I know about it.
See, and if she knows, everybody should have known.
Right.
Except apparently the rafters.
Well, now that it's become such a big thing, I think everybody will know now,
yeah.
But, yeah, so it's interesting. It's there's a car in the river. You don't expect it to be there.
But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had questions about that when I saw that article.
Yep.
I have some serious questions about this next one.
Oh, yes.
I think the parental/uncle supervision needs to be seriously examined.
Uncle. Just think about that. It was the uncle.
So I came across an article that shows a pair of stand-up paddleboarders. There, two of them are on the stand-up paddleboard. Out looking for a shark. A dramatic moment, a great white shark hunted a pair of paddleboarders in California after they went searching for it.
Hmm. And you make yourself
first
aware
question,
of them.
Why?
No. Like, what are you doing?
Footage shows the Predator preparing to ravage Robert Kagan and Kyla Ross as they furiously rode in the opposite direction.
You shouldn't have put yourself in the place in the first place.
Incident happened off the Pacific coast in Santa Barbara as they were visiting family during Father's Day weekend. Robert and Kayla had heard about the sighting and rushed off, eager to locate the shark.
I want to see a shark. That'll
they
be
must
neat.
Be from the prairies. An uncle of one of them had deployed a drone to guide them in the right direction. Why does your uncle hate you? That's my next question.
Yeah.
Who put the uncle in charge is the next question. Why was no one
encouraging them?
Why was no one else going, hey.
Did it say how old the kids were?
No, they look like teenagers.
Yeah.
So at some point, somebody went and went, this probably isn't a good idea. You know, sharks can be rather bitey.
Yes. Let's think about this for a sec. Just a moment. Mm-hmm. Let's step back and think about this for a second.
After some time in the water, the pair headed back to land, disappointed they missed it, only to realize the shark had been tracking them entire time.
The shark found them.
When the hunters become the hunted. We paddled out pretty far, Kayla said. Robert said that he saw something that and that we had to head back to shore right now. But I didn't see it because I was just looking forward paddling, so I didn't know what he saw, how big it was, so we just went straight back. But that was a little nerve-wracking. Robert recalled feeling a mix of adrenaline and excitement as he and Kayla ventured off to find the shark.
That's crazy.
He described it as a big deal, adding, like, probably shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm, that should have been your first clue. There's a moment it becomes real, especially when I saw the shark. Kayla went out twice to try and find the shark. She said she would go and do it again and hope she can find an even bigger shark next time. Somebody needs to take the paddleboard away from this girl. Their enthusiasm for the encounter with a predator comes just weeks after a surfer was mauled by a gigantic shark in California.
So interesting. Uncle explains it all. Not my kids.
He is no longer the funcle, the fun uncle. When did you realize your uncle hated you? Well, the minute he got that drone up and said, go left. And there was a shark was sitting there. Maybe the shark paid him.
Maybe.
Anyway, so at the bottom of the article, there was comments. They set out to find the shark. The shark decided to return the favor. Darwinism at its finest.
Yep.
Some people I see with absolutely no common sense, but we would all have to be shocked if it all went wrong.
Okay, make sure you're shocked.
Right? Because, I mean, the rest of the people that had nothing to do with this event would all be looking like, how did you not see that coming?
Is there a video of them being eaten?
Well, apparently the Funkle has it on his drone.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. Yeah, go towards the drone. Yeah. Go into the light. Unbelievable. I have questions.
Drunken campers. Hey, run up and smack that bear on the butt.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
$20 says you can't ride that bison. Oh, man.
No common sense.
Yep. Anywho. Hey, if you live in Toledo, Ohio, and you want to get on the water, Metro Parks Toledo is highlighting several ways people can get out on the water this summer, including kayaking classes, equipment rentals, and opportunities to paddle at multiple parks. Metro Parks Toledo Outdoor Skills Crew lead and paddle specialist Amanda Domlowski said the Metro Parks offer options for people who are new to kayaking as well as experienced paddlers. You can do a quick try it session where we teach you the very basic skills. It's about 1 hour program on beginner friendly tours. Then we have more advanced classes, says Domlowski. Oops. She's been kayaking since she was a child, became certified 12 years ago. She has been paddling and teaching paddling classes for canoe, kayak, and stand-up paddleboard since then. Other programs include teaching rescues and paddle safety. Domalski said an important safety tip is to wear a well-fitted life jacket. Before heading out, paddlers should pull straps snug to keep the life jacket from lifting up by the head if someone goes into the water. Said anyone can bring their own equipment to parks such as Blue Creek Metro Park and paddling during park hours. People without their own kayak can rent one from Metro Parks Toledo at self-serve kiosks by downloading an app. Rental costs $20 an hour. These rental self-serve kiosks are really becoming a big thing.
We
started talking about them 2 years ago, I think it was. And there seems to be a lot of them everywhere across North America.
It's kind of fascinating that these are there, that they exist. Mm-hmm. It's a great idea. Not everybody can afford to get into the sport by buying a new kayak. And if you want to just get out and try it, or if you're visiting from out of town and you got a free time, you're going to go, paddle for half a day type thing, you rent it.
Yeah.
And it's there, these self-serve kiosks is a great idea. You're not paying somebody to man it all day. It's self-serving.
And you can keep it down to $20 an hour by not having somebody there all the time, right?
That's why it's affordable.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
That's pretty cool. Rentals are located at Blue Creek, Howard Marsh, Farnsworth, and Maumee River water trails. More information about upcoming kayak events and how to get involved available at metroparkstoledo.com. So get out there and take a lesson.
Yes.
Give it a whirl.
Find something nearby.
Mm-hmm. Toledo, Ohio is only about 6 hours from here.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's doable.
We could go. Mm-hmm. Rent a kayak. Get a lesson.
Yep.
Aha. The other thing that's happening at the end of July, which...
coming up quick.
You're not going to do, but it would be kind of neat to go check out. The Osabal River Canoe Marathon, a.k.a. The Marathon... is a nonstop 120-mile C2 two-person canoe race held annually on the last full weekend of July. This year's the 24th and 25th. The race starts at night with a thrilling Le Mans-style running start to the river in Grayling, Michigan, and ends the next day on the shores of Lake Huron in Oscoda, Michigan. Marathon is not a recreational canoe float. It's an ultra-competitive race that attracts professional paddlers from across the United States, Canada, and often teams from outside North America. Contestants must be in peak condition to compete in the race within the allotted time and endure the grueling and strenuous physical and mental strains that the marathon demands of the paddlers. This is like a brutal race.
Ooh, yeah.
Nicknamed and known simply as the Marathon, it first ran in 1947 and is perhaps the oldest marathon canoe race in the United States. It's the largest non-stop canoe-only race in North America. No kayaks, no...
paddleboards,
nothing, just two-man kayaks. The race has been billed as the world's toughest spectator race. As many of the spectators follow the racers overnight down the full 120 miles, 190 kilometers, to the finish. Former Grayling resident Jim Harrison wrote an article in Sports Illustrated in 1973 in which he referred to the race as a night of unmitigated punishment.
Just sell it there.
Right? Hey, why don't you go on down here? We'll do the old night of unmitigated punishment. They should just call it that.
Yeah.
Original idea for the race was to attract tourists after Labor Day from 1947 to 1960. The race was held in August and September with start times of midnight, early afternoon, and 9 to 10 p.m. Prior to 1968, teams left at timed intervals. Major sponsor Grayling Chamber of Commerce withdrew their support in 1961, and the race began at the Camp Tan Bridge in the morning and ended at Lake Huron. For most of the following 7 years, all teams began on Saturday morning in Grayling, stopped for the night in Mio, with pro teams resuming the race Sunday morning from Mio to Oscoda. Amateur teams got a head start at Five Channels Dam. The Le Mans start was instituted in 1968, now an iconic part of the race. The nonstop race returned for good in 1969, it was canceled. There was a lot of bickering between towns up and down the up and down the river there on where it should start, where there should be stops, and the whole meal deal. It was held on the July 4th weekend. The following year, the race was moved to the last weekend, July. The starting time was moved from 10 p.m. to 9 p.m. during the 80s, as was the day, from Friday night to Saturday night. The format has remained constant since then. There is a three-part documentary entitled Osabel, was released in 2024 on YouTube. It was subtitled The River, The Race, The Legend.
The River, The Race, The Legend.
You can Google it and you can watch it. I'm in the middle of it right now. It's about an hour and a half long.
Okay.
It gives a lot of old stuff, a lot of the people that started way back when, and now they're second, third generations going here. You know, the types of paddles they use, paddles and canoes they used to use versus, you know, the ultralight carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Dude's got his boat up on his shoulder. He's carrying it like an old ghetto blaster. And I'm showing my age for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Google that on YouTube and watch it. And you can go to osabelcanoemarathon.org. For more information on the race itself.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I just found out about this, and I'm just thinking, that sounds pretty.
I was trying to find it on a map here. So it is New York State.
Mm-hmm. No, it's Michigan.
Oh, okay. That's not what my
Grayling, Michigan to Oscoda.
Google has failed me.
Oscoda.
Mm-hmm.
Because you end up in Lake Huron.
Okay.
Google Maps. Shame.
I know. It doesn't always know. It's not always perfect.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go check that out and watch the video. Like I say, it's pretty neat and telling it. There's a little bit of the first time two Canadians came down from Montreal, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
And they said, oh, we're going to come down and do this. And they won it. Never seeing the river before race day. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and doing it and winning it. And then friendships forming, and one guy couldn't make it, so there was an American guy and a Canadian guy in the same boat, and they won it. And they're saying, see, this shows that Canadians and Americans can get along and they can paddle together and the whole thing. And yeah, people that have been doing it. One lady has done it 42 years in a row.
Wow.
Wow.
That's dedication.
Right?
How do you always have in the right place of the right mindset, the right, like, none of those years there was an issue. It's just, it always worked out.
Right.
That's amazing. Dedication. That's dedication.
And then they get, you know, there's other ones where their kids have been watching, growing up, watching their parents race. Now all of a sudden they're like, you know what? I'm going to try this out.
My dad did it. And I'm going to do it too.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool. That's all I got this week.
I've got nothing to add.
No, because you're on vacation.
I am.
You've already left. You're not even here.
I'll be almost back by the time this airs.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's a shame.
That I'm back? Wow.
Dagnabbit. Well, I hope you have a great trip.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. I hope you're having a great trip.
Yeah. We'll see if we can get out on the canoe.
You better.
We'll see.
You need to.
Yes. Well, I've been digging into a lot of the, we've talked about this previously, and I get into some of these websites that talk about all the river runs in New Brunswick, and it's all broken up by section. It's like a lot of these are just, you can find a 4-hour route just for an afternoon float or whatever. So get out there with the family and the wife and the kids, and yeah, there's a lot of interest. And ideally, I would like to rerun some of the routes that I did when I was in junior high school. It's like, oh, I could do that again.
Apparently, Derek's not moving back home.
No.
He's going to move to New Brunswick.
Well.
His original home.
I tried to do that, but No, her family's all here in Ontario, so I'm not allowed to move back to my family.
I think your family has told her, no.
Yes.
No.
Don't you let keep them come home. There.
Yeah, you can come exactly. and visit, but exactly. we don't want them here. All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, where you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.